Welcome to another edition of the Untold Patriots Stories podcast with Scott Prusak and Dave Usher, where you'll hear stories told by the players and media members.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Untold Patriots Stories podcast. Tonight, we are going to celebrate our one-year anniversary by having the very first podcast that we released on July 11th. And our first initial guest was a member of the Patriots All-1990s team, Maurice Hurst. I'm Scott Prusak, along with Bob Hilberg and Dave Usher. So we're going to get this thing kicked off. Dave, I'm going to hand it off to you, and we'll get going here.
Hey, Maurice, great to have you on.
Yeah, great to be back. Can't believe it's been a year.
They've added me since. You brought me up on that podcast. You said that you had a picture of the three of us, and that may be, I got to thank you, because that might have put a seed in their mind that they needed to have me on here, and I've been enjoying it since. So,
yeah, I remember that. I got some good memories from that visit down there. So you guys treated us well, and we had a great time. Still talking about it.
Well, that's great. You know, I was, you know, just doing a little research and looking back at some of the things, and you know, so you've had some amazing teammates, and you know, I could point out a lot of the bigger name guys and what have you, but what I'm wondering is, you know, when you're practice, you know, it's that time of year when guys are earning their spots and trying to have to work hard. What was it like for you, even in practice, to have to tackle like a Ben Coates or a Marion Butts or somebody like that? Marion Butts, me and my friends would joke, was 4 yards in a cloud of dust. I mean, was that what it was like in practice with him too?
Yeah, but it's more or less during the summer practice, the two-a-day, you would have to run into these guys. A lot of times it came to the point where you could avoid those tackles. Now, it's funny that you say that, because we had when we had Rod Russ, we would tackle during the year, which was strange because if you remember that year, Rod Russ was there, we had all types of injuries. I mean, we lost tons of guys that season. And it was strange that Rod Russ had us tackling. And I'm thinking he had the Pittsburgh mentality or whatever it was. But, I mean, you had me tackling a guy. He really was a fullback. He went to Tampa Bay, I think. He was drafted. Jamie Lawson that year. Now, Jamie Lawson was bigger than Butts. So, you know, so, yeah, and Rod Russ would help us out there actually tackling the cornerbacks, the safeties, one-on-one tackling during the year, and it was weird. And, you know, we had so many injuries that year, but usually you're able to avoid those guys until it's like goal line live or something like that. So I kept my distance.
Good for you.
I figured once I got up and started to be the starter, you don't have to do all that, right? So I had to work my way up. I had to make a few tackles as a rookie. Then all of a sudden, I was free. So,
well, I love when you anticipate plays. I mean, so, you know, a lot of guys study film and study tendencies. So when you're a defensive back and you're trying to anticipate, but, you know, you kind of grew up a little bit as a wide receiver and then got switched to defensive back. Did that help you become a defensive back?
That's a good question. I think it really did, because, and actually I was just looking at a football play on here. They were showing D'Angelo Hall and the wide receiver going at it from Houston. Yeah, I think he got hit the Cardinals now. But and I was looking at the route he ran, and he really broke Hall down. But when I never saw the play. When I saw the route, I said, he's about to stop. And Hall didn't stop, and he reacted, and he tore his hip or something. And I'm saying to myself, I would have been all over that play because I saw it before. You know what I'm saying to myself? It wasn't even route. You know, he just took off and burst, and I'm saying, he's not going deep. So what is Hall still going? But before the play developed, just looking at it, I says, man, I would have jumped on that out route like fast, but Paul delayed and tore his hip up. But it was weird, but because I think what I could feel was like a receiver trying to push me a little bit and what I would do on the offensive side. So it may have just translated, but I could see the routes. It was a tremendous advantage, I think, for me, because I remember we were practicing against San Diego, and the guy, he said, man, you're guessing the routes. And I said, well, run another route. You know, Anthony Miller. He said, you're guessing the routes. And I said, what am I guessing? This one-on-one. You run whatever you want to run. And I remember he called me out in the middle of practice. He said, I don't want you. I want you. He said, I want your best. I want you. So when I got on him, he and I went like three times in a row, and Humphreys threw the ball on the ground. Like Humphreys wouldn't even throw it. I had him covered. And he was just like, he said, man, you're guessing the routes. I said, I don't guess routes. I see them. You know, like I see what's going on. And it was an advantage. It's a very good question. And I tell kids, if you can play that position for a little while and move to DB, it's probably an advantage for you because you learn to catch the ball too. You know, right. So you learn that, and you learn to feel a route of what you're trying to do to get open. So it was an advantage for me. And, you know, finding a long ball was easy because I did it as a receiver. So when I was running, I could find a long ball. So it was not, I wouldn't panic or nothing. But you see people panic a lot of times and they lose position. So I think, Bob, that was right. I think the transition really did help quite a bit.
Yeah, because, I mean, your first touchdown interception, you know, Jim Kelly and Andre Reed, and you said, I know where they're going, and boom, you cut it and took it.
Got an interception and took it, and like I said, I never panicked when the ball was in the air. Like, I didn't panic, but I made a decision. If I saw it, I could make that decision on whether I was going to be able to make the play, have to stretch out for the play, or make the interception. But it translated fast. Like it went fast, and then all of a sudden, here you were. And so being moved from wide receiver to that, I didn't have to really look at the ball fast or catch it. So I think that it helped me out. Plus, a little peripheral vision of seeing this route and that route. So it kind of just clicked. Like you said, it was strange. It kind of clicked for me because I only played defensive back 2 years in college.
Yeah.
I actually played wide receiver, so – 2 years in college, and then got moved to cornerback by Greg Blosch. I know you'll probably know Greg Blosch, the coach in, with the Bears and Green Bay. Coach Blosch came up to me and he said, you should play defensive back. He said, you should play defensive back. He said, man, you got to – he said, you burst on the ball, you catch the ball. And I said, man, I don't like it. He says, yeah, he said, just try it. He said, try it. He said, I promise you. He said, you're going to play in the NFL. That's why he talked to me. He said, you're going to play in the NFL at wide receiver. But you're going to be a dime a dozen. He right. said, you can run, you can catch, but they got a lot of you. He said, if you can get on the other side and figure it out, he said, you're going to play in the NFL. And he switched me over during the spring, and then he got called back up. But I stayed over there with the new coach, and it just translated to, okay, here we go. So I started liking it. So wow. It worked out.
So this year, Dante Skarnecki is going into the Patriots Hall of Fame. What dealings did you have with Coach Scar, and you know what memories can you kind of give us with your dealings with him?
Well, I know one thing. It was, I'll never forget this. It was my first game, my rookie year, and I was never a returner, right? So the game was starting. Was playing a preseason game, and I'm like the 45th guy on the chart back there. So we warm it up and warm it up. And he comes up to me right before the kickoff. He goes, you're going to return kicks. I said, huh? Like, this is not what I got. Not in the NFL. You don't run these, because at that time you had to run the kick back. There was no
touchback
to the 25. So, boy, he came to me, I'm talking minutes before the kickoff. And he says, you're going to run. And maybe it was his technique or tactic to do that, but not to scare me. But I was seeing a little bit of playing time. I wasn't starting yet. I was seeing a little playing time in the nickel. But he says, you're gonna return. And boy, after that, I couldn't even think straight. Yeah. You know, I said, oh no, what am I gonna do? So they kicked the ball off. I was playing Green Bay. They kicked it off. I caught it and I start up the field and I see this hole and I jumped through it. And I honestly closed my eyes because I said, these guys, somebody's going to kill me.
Yeah.
So the guy grabs me like that. And I hit the ground. And he goes, man, I didn't even tackle you. I said, man, I didn't even tackle you. And Dante said, no more for you. I said, no more kickoffs for you. I said, thank you very much. I love because I did not want that. It happened to me in college, sort of the same way. Opening day, the coach in college put me in, and then it was a repeat. But Dante was, he understood the game, and he understood players. He was just an outstanding person and a very, very good coach. Fun to be around, but he got what he wanted out of you. You know, if you were on a team, and he coached his players well, you wanted to play for him. That's what was different. Special teams players at the time wanted to play for him. But he understood the entire game. And there were times he would come up to you and tell you a little something about defense, if you were doing something, Maurice, maybe look at this. So I appreciated him, and rightfully so, he should be inducted into that Hall of Fame. But I'll never forget that. And my final game, well, I got one punt return on my stats. And we were in the middle of the Saints game. It was 24-3 or something, 28-3. We come back to 24-3, but the wide receivers are all blown out. I mean, they're tired, right? They're running nothing but running gun. He goes, "You're going to return." I said, "Return punts? I haven't returned a punt in eight." Since the game, just send it back there. He's like, "Irvin's tired. Sammy's out. They're all running. You got to return." And this is like 24 something. And it's like, this is a game time deal. You know what I'm saying? I said, "Okay, so you can just fair catch it, Mo, and get out of here. And we're going to get the ball 50 yard line, whatever it is, because it was putting out the end zone." And I happened to just see that I had enough room, and I caught the punt and nearly broke it. Actually, guy tripped me up. I never forget it, but he tripped me up going through the hole. And it gave us a chance to tie it up. We couldn't score, but ended up losing the game 24-28 or something like that.
Yeah, 28-24, yeah.
Yeah, so he turned to me and he was like, "You're going to return punts." And I'm like, "Never return a punt all," like, 2 years or whatever it was. I'm like, "I'm not a punt returner," but I was third on the chart. But he understood that part of the game, and I think he understood the players and how to use them. So that's hats off to him. He deserves it. He's a very good.
We had him on. Very articulate, very smart guy.
Very smart guy. Understood every aspect of the game, which was good. So, and the guys loved him.
You talk about the guys, and I'm curious. It was almost like you were on two different teams with the Patriots, right? The pre-Parcells and then the Parcells team kind of changed things around. And those different, like, so the early years and then the Parcell years, who were the leaders on that team? I mean, who were the guys that maybe you looked to as a young guy, or who do you think some of the players looked at in the huddle?
Well, when I got there, it was a little intimidating because we had Raymond, Ronnie, you had four pros. Mm-hmm. You had Max Swain. I think the guy Max Swain, he was coming back. You had, so they kind of had a lineup. They had drafted a guy early, but that defense was LePette, Sims. You had a lot of guys that had been there. And you had a lot of guys off that Super Bowl team, so it was kind of a veteran team. And Ronnie LePette, he really kind of took to me a little bit early on. So that was one guy. But that huddle was full of all pros and some good players. And you were on a good, Roland James. Them guys knew everything about plays. I was just stunned that they knew how routes went, setups went. They understood calls. They would make the change of the call from cover two to cover three, whatever, cloud. It just was like an easy transition having him and Fred Marion there. So it was good. And I saw y'all had Grogan, those guys. It was like older guys, Stanley Morgan. That team was, it was built. Like, it was a good football team. Unfortunately, that year, we did have a couple of injuries. I think Lip went out, and then we lost Tippett. Yeah. We lost Tippett. Yeah. So it kind of went downhill a little bit. And then we ended up, I think, 9-7 or something like that, that season, or 8-something. But that team was already like built. They were like, it was fun because you were in there with pros. Like, I mean, it was all pro players, and they kind of understood what was going on. Johnny Rambert. We had, the four linebackers we had. Yeah. McGraw. Just that whole team was just, it was like there was nothing there that was missing in terms of that talent, that leadership, and those coaches just had to make sure they made the right calls. But unfortunately, that year we had some serious injuries that knocked a bunch of guys out. So when I got there that year, you had those people there to kind of fall back on. And I was a youngster in the huddle. Like I was, you know, a rookie in a huddle, but everybody else understood what they had to do. So here I was, and I, like in myself, I thought, well, they're going to mess with me because I'm the rookie in this bunch. But, you know, but I can remember Fred Merritt understanding everything, like every play, every defense, every offense. He would be shifting you because this was all kind of new to me. We didn't run that many defenses. And we'd have to swap a defense if the strength went here to this. And so you had that era. Then all of a sudden we went through that little lull where it was like everybody was almost on their own. We were trying to get an identity with Ry Russ. And I think McPherson came in, but there was no leader. Like it's like everybody wasn't like they were just playing, and you never got that leadership. And then you had that lull in there for that couple of years. And then when Parcells came in, we brought a lot of young guys in, but we had enough to where Bill kept enough players where we had some leadership. And then he built that, you know, after that. So when we first got there, yes, we had it. Then it kind of went in the lull. And then all of a sudden, we gained it back when Bill came in and brought a lot of young guys in. But we knew that's what we were going to have to build that. So that was kind of where it stood at, you know, kind of like how it went for those years. So,
did you see like McGinnis and Ted Johnson, guys like that, stepping up early, or did it take them a while to
assemble? No, they stepped up early to play. They stepped up early to play. The game was a little fast for them, and we had some mistakes and things like that, but they were playing fast. And that was one of the keys, and I think that's what Bill wanted. But they came in with the intent, him and Slade and a couple young guys came in. You can see that they came in with that intent to play and try to lead. But when you're in that NFL, it takes a little bit of time to get that respect to those players. But they worked hard in practice. They hustled. They was always upbeat. And you could see they were going to develop into good football players. So, but they were not slow learners. They were guys that you could see they wanted to be that leader. But they wanted to show you they were leaders, which was good. So that huddle, we had Vincent Brown. You know, we had some leftover guys from previous years that was actually in that huddle. Tim Gold, I think, was still there, people like that. So we had enough youth and enough older guys. I think that's how Bill planned it out, that we were able to kind of overcome some of the shortcomings. We lost quite a few games that first year by 3 points. We had Sisson. Mrs. Sisson. So you had that, and you know, Bill, we were just trying to figure it out. We were saying, man, we're losing by 1 point, 2 points, and you'd have missed 3 field goals. So, but Bill, at that point, nobody wanted to say nothing. So Bill just took over. He knew he had to do that. So he took over and he says, you just keep playing the way you're playing. We'll get the kicking game going. So that was good. Then you can see what he allowed those players to become, very good football players.
So, I mean, the Patriots last year ran into a lot of backup quarterbacks, but this year we're going up some tough ones. But you played against some Hall of Famers, you know, Marino, and certainly I wondered if there's a lot of trash talking when you went up against Kelly and his receivers, Andre Reed and Duper and Clayton. I mean, what was happening on the field when you had those kind of dynamic quarterbacks?
Yeah, you kind of like make sure you're ready to go. But yeah, it was some trash talk. And actually, I ran into Duper about a month ago, and he was like, "Man, I remember beating you for a Rossi." No, you didn't. He did not. You know, I was you might have caught a pass here and there, but you didn't beat me like that. But it was funny how they went up, Miami Dolphins, we'd play them, and boy, Duper would run back to the huddle every time, and he'd be, man, I had him. And it was funny, Marino would look over to me and say, he had you, and I'd say, nah. He would ask me, he'd say, yeah. And then the other day when I saw him, he said, man, him and Clayton had a click. I was open all the time. I said, he wasn't open all the time, you know? So he was more of a deep route runner. right. kind of come back. He wasn't that Clayton kind of guy that could kill you in the center of the field. So it was funny. We had that. And I see him before the game. It was funny because we played the 49ers, and that was my rookie year. And then I'm looking at Roger Craig. I'm looking at Joe Montana. I'm looking at these guys going, like, I'm coming on this field, and I'm like, these are guys that I've been watching, like, play. And I stayed out there seeing Jerry Rice in the warm-up, and I'm knowing at that point, the coach said, he says, you're gonna be all right, so I'm going to give you some help. He said, but you're going to take Jerry Rice. And I, like, and I was a rookie, and I was like, so I'm watching John Pillar. I'm watching these. They just look like pros, you know? And I'm thinking to myself, like, just a rookie. But I got out there and, you know, I did some stuff with him. And actually to the point where Jerry Rice came over after the game, because I was just watching him. The game was over. And I was standing there and said, I just finished this game with these guys, Montana, you know, Jerry Rice, Roger Craig. And I'm looking, I see Rice come out of the crowd. And he said to me, Swack. He called me Swack. He said, Swack, you're going to be all right. But I had to follow him the whole game. He caught about 8 passes, but nothing was big.
Right.
You know? But nothing was big. So we had our little things. I know we had it. I used to have it out with the receivers from the Broncos, Vance Johnson and those guys.
Oh, yeah.
Because they would chop block you. And, you know, you'd be walking, you're going back, and then chop block you. And, man, I can remember Vance Johnson, he went to chop block me. It was freezing cold up there. The game almost over. And he went chop block, man. I ended up stepping on his hand. Like, I said, I stumped his hand. He went down, and I stumped his hand. And I said, man, you going to try to take me out. This game is over. Y'all up 24-3. You out here. Man, my coach, he said, my coach going to get on me. I said, you tell your coach, you ain't coming out here to cut me, you know? So,
yeah, it's going to be hard. It's gonna have to be hard to catch the ball without your hands, right?
Yeah. I said, yeah, the game over with. You out here running around chop block. He said, oh, coach. I said, I stepped on his hand, so. But most of the guys were, you would talk to, and it just was, my rookie year was just, it was fascinating to see, like, those guys that I had saw, like, on TV, Wesley Walker, and I was saying, wow, I'm lining up against Wesley Walker, and I'm saying, this is something, you know, that you think about, and I'm like, this is weird, but ended up playing against those guys and seeing them, and I remember Mosi Tutupu, and just watching them on TV, and I'm like, wow, this, you know, I'm in the actual huddle or the game around these guys. So it was It was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Well, you stepped up because you made the 89 all rookie team. So you did okay.
Yeah. I laughed at somebody like that. I said, well, I did beat Deion Sanders out for something. He didn't make it. He didn't take it. I beat him out.
So Mo, you brought up Parcell. So I have a question for you. So The first time he walks in the locker room, what's it like with all? Because at that time, I mean, he had some clout with him. So, take us back to that first time he walks into the meeting room, and you know he talks to you for the first time. And what were the guys' reactions? And then how did he gain the respect? I mean, just being him walking in the room, he gained the respect. But what did he say to you guys that first time? And then how did he go about getting the respect of the players after that?
Yeah, well, when he first came in, we had this big team meeting, and he actually cut to the chase. He says, look, there's going to be a lot of guys here who are not going to be here. He had said it. He just said, there's going to be a lot of guys here. And he says, a lot of guys that may not be here, I'm going to bring guys in. He said, so every guy is competing. You know, basically, he was like, everybody felt that you didn't have a job. Like, you were starting on a football team with nothing. Like, this, you know, when normally you would say, oh, I was a starter last year, I'm going to be the starter this year. It wasn't that. It was as if he was like, I'm going to get the right team here. If you're going to be part of this team, then you're going to do what's asked of you. And he kind of set that tone that you were almost fighting for a job again. That's what was different about then when his other coaches came in. It was more of, you know, they would have new players, but they would still be with that mentality that, okay, I got him. He made you feel as though you weren't there, like you were just a guy coming in. And, you know, as he stayed, you kind of grew, and he grew on the players. And but he took command of that room. Like, he was like, this is all a tryout. Basically, it was like a tryout. You were like back at, I don't care if you were all pro, I don't care if he was Andre Tippett. That didn't matter. When he set that tone that the players who are going to be here are going to be ones that I choose. He said it might be some more guys come from somewhere else. But when he set that tone, you knew you just wasn't a starter. You know what I mean? He put something in you like that little fear. And it wasn't nothing where he was loud and boisterous, but it was more like, this is another tryout. You know what I mean? It was like you felt like, I'm back at square one, which was good because you needed that. We needed to start over and kickstart it. So, and then he started with the off-season workouts. He started with a lot of stuff. And you know the story. I think I told you the story of what he did me. My contract year was the following year. Right. I played, contract year. And then he said he went and got, I think, Ricky Reynolds and Myron Guyton. And he gave them money, right? And then he told me, well, I'm going to give you this much. And I said, no, you're not going to give me less than them. Their teams let them go. You know, so he and I met. And he flew me. He said, come on down. He flew me in. And he said, we sat down and talked. And he said, well, I said, no, coach, I'm not going to take less than them. And you brought them from another team. I said, no, I'm not. So he said, okay, we talked a lot. And then he sent me back to my hotel room. And I got back to my hotel room in Boston. And I was like, maybe I'll be going to another team. He probably going to call me and tell me another team. You know, I thought he'd trade me or do something. And I get a call in my hotel room from his secretary. She said, Maurice Parcells said, get back down here. So I drive back to the stadium. He said, what you want? I said, I don't care if it's $1 more than both of them. You give me $1 more than them and you show me you want me. He said, you got it. Mm-hmm. Okay, we got a deal? I said, we got a deal. I said, but you're not going to pay me less than them. So he and I always laugh and joke about it. And like I said, he called me the other day and he was like, he said, you know, you was one of my favorite players, right? I said, mm-hmm. And he said, you just, but he set that tone. You could tell the difference in when he took over it and when Rod Russ came in almost under the players. Like it felt like he was beneath some of the big players we had. Yeah. Parcells just appeared to be bigger than them. Yeah, right. And, you know, like I said, he made it like a tryout. Like nobody was on his football team and they weren't, you know, you had to make the football team again. So that I think they needed that. That's what started it.
So two follow-up questions to that. So the first one would be, did you ever see anybody challenge Bill? And what was, I mean, I think we all know what the end result probably was, but did you ever see somebody challenge him? And then he had to have had a nickname for you. So first, did you ever see him challenge? Do you ever see a player challenge him? And then what was that like to see? And then what was the nickname he had for you?
Well, I saw Bruce Armstrong challenge. Bruce Armstrong challenged him. And I understood that because he needed Bruce Armstrong. You know what I'm saying? I saw them get into it. And in summer camp, it was a big old to-do. But, you know, Bill backed off, but he still held his ground, you know. So, and once Drew kind of grew up, I saw Drew kind of challenge him a little bit, you know, like that. Those were some of the guys that I saw challenge him. Most of the guys respected him. You know, we did practice against them with the Giants my rookie year. And I saw him on the sideline. Him and Lawrence Taylor got into it. But it was almost like an act. You know, Lawrence was sitting on his helmet, and Bill yelled at him and screamed at him. He's like, hey, get out of here. So that's when I first saw Bill Parcells. This was my rookie year.
Yeah.
We played the Giants. And Bill was – he was coaching the Giants. And that's when I first saw him. And I was just like, So Lawrence Taylor sitting on the helmet, kneeling down, not doing nothing. And Parcells just would say something to him, just ignite him. And, you know, and so I the only person I ever saw stand up to him really while I was there was Bruce Armstrong. I saw Bruce Armstrong kind of because he got mad at Bruce or something. He may have given up a sack and it was a oof. So, but I knew he needed Bruce. He wasn't going to let his left tackle go. Now, I don't know the nickname.
Yeah. Maybe not a nickname, but he called Terry Glenn she, and, you know, I mean, he would kind of like use words to get it, guys. So did you have a nickname or would he say, did he have something he knew he could get you going with if he said something to you or?
I tell you what he did. And I didn't say this, but the first meeting, so I'm sitting somewhere. Apparently he knew and I was sitting like behind somewhere, and he said, "You, I want you right here. Look in the front, right where he's at." And I said, "I said, huh?" He said, "I want you right here." Like he picked me out of there, and he said, "I want you right here." He said, "This is your spot every morning, like right in front of him." He said, "And I want my podium up here every morning." And so I had to get the podium every morning. I tell you, he said, "That's your job, right?" I said, I don't like to sit in the front. Like, I'm not a front guy. I'm a guy that sit back. Let something happen and let's see how it goes back. But it was funny. He said, "You, Mo," he called me Mo. "He moved, Mo, come here. You sit right here." He told somebody, "Get up." He said, "I want him right here." And he said, "Every morning I want this podium up here waiting for me." So I said, "Well, there you go." And from that point on, every morning, I had to put the podium up for him. And it was, I was on time. I was on time, you know. So every morning I had to have his podium up, and everybody laughed and said, "That's it, you know, Mo is this guy. Mo is this guy. And he loves Mo. He loves the Mo." So that was one of my finest moments being chosen by him. He didn't even know the team. You know, he knew the team, but he was just chosen to say, "You come up here." So it was like an honor.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
So he gave you some respect right away. That's great.
Yeah, so that was fun. But every morning I had to have that podium up for him in the morning and put it up. So that was my job. He said, this is your job. And you get my podium up.
So being a former defensive back and a former scout, I wanted to get your take a little bit on the current Patriots. But before I do that, when you were on the first time, you were talking about some of your scouting, the big draft day with the Saints when everyone had to go home. And you said, I wonder what happened to those guys. I won't go through the whole list, but of the eight guys that were traded for Ricky Williams, the ones that Desmond Clark had a 12-year career as a tight end, And then LeVar Arrington was part of that too. He had three Pro Bowl years, shorter career, but just to answer your question, the rest of the guys, not so much.
Digger didn't do too bad, huh?
Yeah, no, he did okay. He did okay.
Digger didn't do too bad. But he could have cut all that out in the beginning. He could have cut all that scouting out. I've never seen nothing like it, because when I was with the Cowboys, it was like that was the event in, you know, over in Irving, Texas. That was the event where you had the coach, the owners, the sons. And that draft day was like really like boom, boom. And we had 30, 40 scouts. They had scouts unlimited. And you had three guys looking at one guy, giving an opinion on the head coach, the assistant coach. So, but for Dicker to do that was just weird. We all set up. We got media, everything there. And they go, "You can go home. The trade is made." Everybody's like, "Huh?" They said, "Well, we're going to get some free agents, but we got to wait and see who's available." And we had traded the whole team away, and we weren't one play away. That was, we weren't one play away. And I guess those draft picks, obviously two of them turned out to be decent players, but maybe he didn't do the wrong thing. You don't know. But it was strange because I went into Bill Coharris' office. I was the director of player programs. And I went into Bill Coharris' office. He was just laid back, like. And maybe I said, "Bill, did we do the right thing?" And he just said, "I don't know, Mo. I don't know." And I wanted to say, "We need more players than that. We need like a quarterback. We need a quarterback. We need a wide receiver. We got Keith Poole at wide receiver. Them people not worth my Keith Poole. You need somebody to go get this ball." You know, we had guys that was like, I'm saying to myself, we had Lil Davis at the running back. Well, he was a number two running back, a number three. But it was like, man, we needed some players. And it was just strange that year. We thought all that scouting, we would start to build that team, maybe even get a quarterback, trade up and get a quarterback. I don't know who went that year. But that was the most shocking thing I'd ever seen. And it was the whole building just empty. Like all the scouts had been on the road the whole season, the whole offseason. All the scouts had did all this paperwork, and none of it. I mean, we had Hoka Gajon at the time, and he was one of our main scouts. And they just sat there, and they were like, "And Dicker went out and played golf." "I'm going to play golf." He came in there with shorts on and a Hawaiian shirt and some slippers. He said, well, deal is done. Back to the golf course.
So, his job was done. He had nothing else to do.
I liked him as a coach. I liked him as a coach, but he was entertaining more than anything. By then, he had kind of tailed off a little bit, you know, in terms of, but he demanded the room too. Like when he talked, he demanded the room. He was one of those Bill Parcells type coaches that demanded the room. And he understood the game of football. It just then, I don't know if he thought that would ignite the team or even the draft picks wouldn't do much, you know, the next few years or something like that. But right. Whatever his idea was, he did it. He pulled it off and we went for it. And him and Ricky ended up with a tuxedo and a dress on.
Yeah, there you go.
So now that you're back in scout mode, you know, we think about the Patriots now. They've got a lot of young cornerbacks. I don't know if you have any thoughts on them, but, you know, their first round pick, they took Christian Gonzalez this year. They got Marcus Jones, who seemed to be exciting last year. Jack Jones, Jonathan Jones. Any of those guys stand out to you, or what are your thoughts on their cornerback?
Yeah, I think you could be okay at the corner. My biggest problem is they lost McCarty, right? In safety, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. That's my biggest problem with the whole deal. You can deal with that, like I said earlier. Well, I could be a rookie and Fred Merriam at the safety because you can understand you're going to get in position where you need to be at. It's going to be that safety position that make those calls. And he makes calls all the way through the line, pretty much. He can make calls on shifts and whatever it is, strengths and all that stuff like that. The linebackers will do it, but you need that one man to patrol that. If everybody is just kind of like, because when you're a rookie, you're going to kind of be on your own. Mentally, you're going to be like, I got to just take care of this, make sure. You know, as you get older, you kind of see things happen and why they happen. Because the NFL is a game where they game plan you as a player. That's mm-hmm. what they basically do. They game plan. Marlon plays a game plan for somebody. So I think the biggest loss, the rookie corners doesn't bother me, especially with Belichick, his experience at the corner. And I think he's going to put them in coverages. Most of the time, New England plays a lot of man. Probably they play a lot of man coverage. They'll play safety high, you know, and they'll have safety in the box, but that's their forte. And then you can get out of that and get some cover two that take a little pressure off the corners. So I think a rookie corner is not bad. I think it's a safety position in my mind that's hindering them. And then, you know, going to the other side of the ball, the wide receiver spot, I don't know what they're trying to accomplish. And I know you can't run out and get a DeAndre Hopkins because it probably don't solve the problem. But I think you need that offensive side, that wide receiver that puts a little threat on the defense. But I think they'll be okay at the corner position, especially with Bill's experience at bringing those corners up, like Hanford Dixon and, you know, those guys. He's been around that position, and he's going to know how to take the pressure off of them. And they probably got a lot one of them, I think the kid that drafted, is a lot of talent. So he can put them in one-on-one and say, that's all you got. You ain't going to worry about nothing. Mm-hmm. Just make plays on the ball. We're going to get to the quarterback. So I think the biggest loss is going to be that quarterback in the middle of the field who can make those plays or make up on plays that you don't have. So in that division now, have passers in it. You don't want to come in against Aaron Rodgers and, you know, worrying about that. So, but I think he understands what kind of coverages he can play against certain quarterbacks. And he's probably going to put most of the pressure on the line and the linebackers. I think that's where he's going to put all the pressure on those players to kind of control that outside in terms of corners and safety. So I wouldn't be worried about them. And I think as the year goes, it'll develop. But hopefully you don't fall too far behind that you're trying to play catch up because that division is going to be tough, especially the Miami Dolphins. And you're going to need guys like that to run because the Dolphins got speed. Now the Jets got speed. The Bills got. So I think when they draft, they look at their division one and they said, this guy can handle him. You know, I think they go down the list and see what this guy can handle him one-on-one or whatever. So I would be concerned with the McCarty, that replacement. That safety, as he made so many plays, and that's the person that kind of controls that defense.
Good insight.
So you came in, Drew Bledsoe came into the league when you were there, Scott Zolak was with the Patriots. Do you have any Bledsoe or Zolak stories for us from an Untold Patriot stories?
Zolak just was, Zolak was our locker room clown. So he was the clown, right? So Zolak, but Zolak
he still is.
Zolak, he would do pranks. He would have shaving cream in your locker. You sit down or something. He was the prankster of the locker room, but he did keep it going. You know, it was something. Days you're down, but he would come up with some kind of prank that would just explode. Everybody would just have a great time. And Drew Bledsoe just was, to me, that was the year they had Drew Bledsoe and Rick Meyer, and we took Bledsoe. Right. And man, when we faced Rick Meyer that year, and I was like, he was throwing like these wobbly balls. And I said, woo, I said, man.
Took the right one.
Yeah, it's a good thing we took the right quarterback. And, you know, I'm saying, this is a far cry from Drew Bledsoe and his first practice. He threw some balls. I mean, he threw a ball that I jumped on an out route and didn't even catch the ball. It was coming so hard, didn't even catch it. Ended up bending my finger back. I was like, ooh, this man got some zip on his ball, you know, and you could tell he was going to be able to throw it. And then, you know, then we played Seattle, and I was like, man, it wasn't like it was close. It wasn't even close to him and them. And I'm saying, I think you're number two. It had to be somebody else there. So, but Drew came in, and you knew he was going to be pretty good, you know. And he developed. He developed into it. He worked hard, and he had a good arm. He wasn't as mobile as you wanted, but he could get the job done. So, I think that was probably the best pick at that time we could have made. You know, that was a serious pick. And, you know, number one don't always end up like that. You know, the number right. one quarterbacks right. don't. You know, fortunately, that was what Rick Meyer was number two. And here you go. You know, smart guy, Notre Dame, whatever it was. But it was not. When we faced him, I was like college. You know, it was like, oh, this guy, he's throwing balls up. He's stepping back. It was like, so they made a great pick right there.
That before was Bledsoe, I mean, you had Hugh Millen, we had Mark Wilson, we had Tommy Hobson, we had Jeff Carlson. I mean, we had like
Scott Seacules.
Oh, we had Grogan too. Grogan, he was on the tail end. We had Flutie.
Doug
Flutie.
All right.
Mm-hmm. We had a host of quarterbacks. We had what's the guy that played in the Super Bowl number 11?
Tony Eason.
We had a really good football team that year there. We had my rookie year, but unfortunately injuries caught up with us, and it just never transpired to win. And we won a few games, but we lost. So, but we went through a lot of quarterbacks. I mean, a ton of, you know what I'm saying? But you could tell, like, even when we went in the game, you felt like, okay. But you're like, this is going to break down, you know. And some of those guys were good backups.
Right.
I thought Hugh Miller was – I didn't think he was a starter. But, yeah, that's basically what we had. And they had brought him in. I think he came from somewhere else, huh? Rams or something. Did Miller come from the Rams or somebody?
Yeah, for you.
Cowboys? I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, Hugh Miller. But, yeah, when he came in, you know, he had a good arm, but – it just didn't seem like things clicked.
He won a couple games. That was it. Yeah.
It didn't click. And then, you know, then you had Parcells come in, and I think he had somebody started before Drew, though. We had, I forgot that year, we had another quarterback, right?
So Tommy Hodson and Jeff Carlson. Yeah. In 92. Yeah.
That's who we had. One of them started. I don't think Drew started the first game or something like that. Did he? I'm not sure.
Jeff Carlson started in two games, left-handed quarterback. Yeah.
Uh huh. Yeah. So Bill didn't throw him right into the fire. Yep. Yeah. So yeah, he kind of let him come along. So that was a good thing for Drew. But
yeah. So we had Zolak on. I guess. Two questions. So what's your funniest Zolak story that you can tell us? And the second thing is Parcells. I remember there was a clip on NFL Films with Matt Barr where he wasn't feeling good, and Parcells told him, throw up in your mouth or something like that. So when you were talking about Sisson missing the field goals, do you ever remember an interaction with Sisson coming off the field? I mean, he must have had some sort of name or comment for him or something like that. So funny Solak story and a comment from Parcells when Sisson was missing the field goals coming off the field.
Oh, you're making me go a long ways back. I mean, Solak did so many funny things. I'm trying to think, just remember being a lot. He kind of hassled Drew a lot his rookie year, you know, and I think he had put something in Drew's helmet, like maybe it might have been shaving cream or something, and Drew put his helmet off, and he had shaving cream or something. It was just, and he was stale and Bledsoe. But he would mess with everybody in the locker room. I mean, your stuff would be missing right before practice. He'd take your helmet or something right before practice. You're looking around. But he was always looking for a chance to have fun, which was good. Now, I will go back to Parcells. Now, I remember this because we were talking a lot. And we were like, man, this man keep missing field goals. And the defense kind of came together and was like, man, we just barely losing these games. And Parcells somehow coming out meeting and said, I'm going to tell all of y'all, I don't want to hear nothing about Scott Sisson. He said, you just keep playing and you give up less points. We'll take care of the kicking. That's when he brought Matt Barr, hit Matt Barr. And but Parcells knew then, he had drafted him in the third round. He had a big lead. But Parcells came to the team, I think it was, and said, I don't want to hear another word about Scott Sisson because somebody must have talked in a paper or something, you know, it was crazy. So, Parcells came in there and said, I don't want to hear another word about Scott Sisson. You just stop the other team from scoring points. You lose by one, you stop them more. You know, and everybody was sitting around like, this doesn't make sense, coach. It's 17-14, and he missed two field goals. You know, we should have won this game. Yeah. You know, nobody took it like that, but I knew. I said, Bill ain't going to keep putting up with this. Because it was getting kind of nerve-wracking to watch him kick.
Sure.
You know, he lined up for the winning field goal, and you're like, you sitting there saying, oh, Lord. But in practice, he would drill 50, 60-yard field goals. I mean, it was just – you could tell he could do it. I don't know what got in his head. Very, very nice guy, too. Super guy. I don't know. I don't think I'd want that much pressure on me with what he had on him. But it was – man, that was tough. But Parcells did say, you don't say nothing else about Scott. Nobody in this room. I don't want to hear another word about Scott. You do your job. And after that, it was over. It was done. So Matt won a few games on some last second field goals or something. And we were still going. And Bill didn't want that embarrassment to have to cut him because he had drafted him so high. So, yeah. You know, he kind of kept him around. So that was his thing, man. Coach Parcells is a good coach. He really got along with his players. A lot of his players, they really like him. I mean, most of the players like him. You know, you had players that didn't, but for most of the guys, I was actually with Lawrence Taylor about 3 months ago, maybe a little bit longer than that, 4 months ago. And I was out in Mississippi with him, and I text Parcells. I took a picture with him, and I text Parcells, and I said, look who I'm with. I said, look who I'm with. And Bill texts me back. He said, you better keep your eyes on him. he texted me back. He said, Mo, keep your eyes on him. So when I showed Lauren, I said, Lauren, let your coach see. He said, look at Bill. Hey, we're going to be. Bill said, you better keep your eyes on him. Keep your eyes on him, Mo. And Ricky Jackson, all of us at the table, fell out laughing. I knew he was going to say something crazy.
Yeah.
But keep your eyes on him, Mo. So. That was funny, man. He had us laughing. Because Lawrence had the tendency to find his golf ball when it ain't no way to rock.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, a mysterious golf ball pop up over there. And you're like, that ball is gone. Now, I look for it, but you leave, and he somehow say, oh, I found it. Oh, you did. So Bill, I knew what Bill meant. Bill said, guys on him, boy. But he bust out laughing. So it was like, it was a good time, man. It was fun.
That's great. We're talking about some of the characters that you played with, and you mentioned Flutie, but there's a couple other BC guys that are notorious characters that you played with. Do you have any stories about Fred Smirlis or Steve DiOssi?
Steve DiBiase, I love Steve DiBiase, man. Steve DiBiase was another one of those guys that was he was like he kept practice going. Like Steve, he was a good guy. I love Steve. And and me and Flutie was funny, right? Me and Flutie would always we would have the day we had walkthrough before the game, we would be out playing like walkthrough football. It was great. I'll be the quarterback this time. Flutie wanted to be the defensive back, and we'd have three guys running route, walking through routes, and I'd be throwing passes. And that was kind of a fun time. Flutie was a super guy. Now Flutie was a he was a fun guy. And it was funny. I can remember when I was looking back, I said, man, we used to play like walkthrough football, like before the practice started. And Flutie would all, come on, let's go. And he'd come up and we'd get out a little earlier and do some walkthrough football. And it became fun as the season went on. And I will say this here, that Parcells did reward you for winning. Now, people think he was always hard, but he rewards you for winning. You know, there were days he would let you get off from running. There were days, you know, and he may have had a plan, but if we won, he said, you can get off. You lose, you know, I'm not going to let you off. So a lot of people look at him as this hard, but there were times when he gave in and you know, I appreciated it. Me, it was a good chance to play with a coach like that. That's just, you know, you don't get too many opportunities like that. Not everybody in the NFL does, you know, it's just, but he was a great coach. But yeah, that was some of my highlights with Flutie. But DiBiase, he was just fun all the time too. All he wanted to do is long snap, but he would run the scout team. You know, he would run the linebacker scout team. He'd have them fired up. He knew he wasn't playing. He played a little bit though, but you know, in his mind, he wasn't playing, but he was always energized. And I think that's what Bill brought there. The guys that he brought some energy, some guys that had won before. And I think those good coaches understand that, and they bring that chemistry in that helps a young team or a team that's developing to get to where it needs to get to. And I think they have a plan. That those coaches have plans.
Well, you played in one playoff game, and it was against the Belichick, you know?
I know.
So, you know, he's coming from the Cleveland Browns, and then he comes here, and everyone says he's going to be a disaster. You know, we had a guy on that wrote a book about Belichick in one of our podcasts, Ian O'Connor. What can you tell us and follow up with in that playoff game and what Belichick has done as a coach?
Well, I think Bill wasn't a happy camper. Bill Parcells wasn't a happy camper, but we had played him earlier on in the year. I think we had played him early in the year. We may have beat him, probably a close football game. And we knew going in there was going to be a close football game. And I think Bill really, Parcells wanted that game. Did I think the team was much better than us? I thought we were still kind of young, but I don't think that team was much better than us. But when he did turn Cleveland around. I think they became respectable because I can remember Bill talking about this team is going to be tough. It's going to be smart. You know, he'd give his speech about the team that you're facing. You know, right. He would tell you there's an undisciplined team. Don't look for this. Don't look for, you know, he would tell you about that team, you know, the week of. And he'd tell certain players what trouble you're going to have. You know, this guy's good. What more you're going to have, you know, you're going to have to make sure you lie. But I felt respect for, you know, I felt he had respect for him. But I think Bill still felt he was, you know, higher of two at the time. Like, you know, when he left Cleveland, and went to New England. Obviously, you know how the deal went down. It wasn't the greatest deal because he had committed to the Jets, right? Committed to the Jets, right? So right. I don't think Bill Parcells was not a happy camper, you know, until the day I think that might be a bit appeal. But I will say that I think, you know, well, you're seeing right now that they're not winning like normal. So this, right. You know what I'm saying? So right. I think there was a foundation built when he took that team over. I think you had an atmosphere. You had a foundation. You had some goals because they've been to the Super Bowl. I think it might have been an easier transition than now, like getting out of this Tom Brady thing. And you fall into the hands of Tom Brady in the sixth round. That's a great thing. You know? Right. But you can see now as developing, it's not developing like you want it to. and you're not moving. So I think people are going to have mixed feelings. He's probably the best coach ever. And I think he has the same mindset as Parcells. I think Parcells was a little more old school. I think Bill Belichick does a little bit more like filling those players out. Like, okay, you know, this is what they do. And he's disciplinary, but I think he still gives a little more. Bill Parcells was just a straight, this is what it's going to be, and this is it. And I think that's where how he ran his football teams. Looking at the Giants that year, I don't know if they made it to the Super Bowl that year. We played them in the preseason. I think they went to the Super Bowl the year we played them in the preseason. So, but you can see he had a good football team, and he had built that football team. So, you know, I mean, I think 6-1, half dozen, those two guys are two of the best coaches you could probably get, you know, and there's probably some other guys out there. But I think we're going to really see what he can do with this turnaround. You know what I'm saying? People are going to have to be able to see. And I don't think it's going to be his legacy, but I think, if it does spiral out of control and you got to do something drastic and Kraft has got to make a decision or, you know, come to a mutual agreement to say, look, you know, it ain't working. But at some point you've got to do something and you don't know what, maybe he can build his team from nothing. That's what he's building now, from nothing, basically. I think when he came in with that other team, it was built. You had some people there, and he brought in more people. But I don't think this year would be telling because, but I think he's a good coach. Both of them are great football coaches, and I wouldn't mind playing for both of them. So yeah,
okay,
I think yeah.
So we'll kind of spin this around and get this closed out. But so my question would be, obviously, you know, we're getting training camps going to be opening up. What's your favorite memory from training camp?
Well, one of them was my, I think I told you the story. Bill Parcells was his first year. And we had two of these. And, you know, in Rhode Island, it would rain at least 5-6 days, you know, during the summer months, and we'd be inside. And so happened the year he took over the team, it didn't rain for 21 days straight, which equaled out to 42 practices, right? You know, so we're going through practice and we're like, no rain. Like, I had been there a couple of years and the fields are wet, we're going to practice in the gym, whatever, you know. Oh, we're gonna lift weights and watch film. Not one day when he came, and everybody said, this man can control the weather, you know. So we were out there every single day for 21 days straight. And he came up to me and he said, come here. He said, you don't like this, huh? I said, no, I'm all right. Me, I said, man, I come from where you practice 3 times a day. I said, my coach in college, sometimes 4. I said, if we didn't have a good practice, we might practice 2 a day. Another practice and at night. And he said, I said, so nothing you can do right here. Do me nothing. I said, now maybe them guys from USC, they probably play around. I said, we were on a football field with sticker bushes and everything, stickers on the ground, you fall. And I said, my coach is the meanest coach or the toughest coach you'll ever know. And he said, who is your coach? I said, Marino Chasm. And he said, I'm going to meet Marino. He said, when practice over, you go upstairs and you tell my secretary, fly Marino Chasm down here. I want to see him. And I went, Edgar Lady, and they flew my head coach down from college for 6 days to watch practice and everything. And he had a great time. He watched practice. He was sitting there. He's screaming. He told Kraft, he said, you got to get some dogs on this football team. You ain't got enough dogs out here. I'm like, coach. I'm like, coach, leave the people alone. This means the dollars you're talking about right here. This ain't, so, and the funny thing about it was funny, right? So every morning, every lunch, and every dinner, him and Parcells sitting at the front of the, line for the lunch in the room. And I would have to pass them too, and they would go, hey, come over here. And I would have to go over, and they would tell a story, And my head coach would tell a story, because my head coach did have a nickname for me. He nicknamed me Sugar. Now, some people thought it was, you know, that was sugar, like sweet, but he was talking about I had sweet feet. So he said, Sugar, come here. He called me Sugar. So I said, come on. My college coach said, Coach, you can't call me Sugar in front of these people, these men. If I called you Sugar, don't you worry about nothing. I was like, God, he said, if I call you Sugar, don't you worry about it. They know. But I had to pass him and Bill sitting right there eating every day. And they would go like this. Bill said, come here, Mo. I try to get by. Come here, Mo. So I had to come over to here, sit down. And my college coach would tell him a story. Hey, Coach, I had to take him down. He would tell his story. And every day I went there, I was like, oh, just let me go eat. So, but it was something. And my college coach, he never forgot that. Like, Bill just, that was just things he did. Like, you know, it made my college, if he was on the sideline screaming during the game, during the practice, he screamed, Mo, get up, Sugar, get up on. I say, Coach, these are different defenses. They got defense where you go there. Your defense was, that's your man, and you got him. You know what I'm saying? So that was like probably the best memory, you know, that I had. And that was it was just outstanding gesture from, you know, Bill Parcells to do that. And my coach never forgot it. He went up there, man. He spent the whole week, 2 days through the game and everything. And yeah, him and Parcells became pretty good friends. So that was probably my fondest memory in terms of that. So that was probably my fondest memory in terms of that. And but I mean, I had some good coaches. I like Raymond Berry. I really did. And, you know, I really did like Raymond Berry. Rod Russ was a little different, you know, and then MacPherson was a little different, but then you had Bill. So I was glad he came. That was a great thing. So.
That's great. My last question, it'd be a quick one, but so you had mentioned earlier one of your former teammates, one of the guys I really like to watch, Vincent Brown. So when you guys are working out, you're in the weight room, who's benching more, the Undertaker or Sugar?
Brown is doing more. But you know what's funny, Brown? You remember Chris Scott?
Yeah.
This guy was stronger than Vincent Brown. And Vincent Brown was one of the strongest players. But Chris Scott was actually stronger than Vincent Brown.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's an untold story.
Yeah. And did Bill draft him? No, MacPherson drafted him. Right? Drafted him, yeah. MacPherson did, I think. But, yeah, Chris Scott was actually stronger than Vincent Brown. And Undertaker was – it was so funny. We'd have to take this test before the season started and everything, before the summer started. And we have to get on this bicycle, and they would shoot you needle or something and take. And Vincent Brown had like 1% body fat. 1%. And it's like, I was like, huh? And I'm sitting at 6'5" and 6". You know what I'm saying? I'm only 175 pounds. This man is 260 pounds, and he got 1% body fat. It was like amazing. And he, the Undertaker. They call him the Undertaker. I remember we played him in college. They call him the Undertaker. Yeah, we played Mississippi Valley and the Undertaker. And I remember my head coach, we were losing to Valley 13-0 at the half. That coach I was talking about, he said, he went to halftime. He said, y'all lose this game, and we're going to practice at every field from here back to Baton Rouge. He said, we're going to practice at every field I know from here back to Baton Rouge. Man, we won 14-13. I don't know what these people do. And I believed it. Honestly, we'd have left that football game. He would have stopped that bus and went. And he was from Mississippi. He had coached at Alcorn. So he knew every football field between and Baton Rouge. And
he meant business.
He said, you lose this football game. Not at halftime. You don't tell your team that. He said, you lose. Like he was talking to somebody on a business deal. Like, y'all lose this football game, and we're going to practice at every field from here back to Baton Rouge. He said, we're going to stop and get off the bus. Man, went out there and beat him 14-13. You tell him I took a break. Ooh, man. oh, my goodness. So that him and Parcells had something in common. They enjoyed that week, you know, talking. So
Well, I'm going to wrap up with, you know, football is a team game. You know, what are some of the lessons that if someone's listening to the show that you learned that you applied from playing football and being around coaches, you know, working as a unit and working as a team and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, you first, you know, and I love the comment that the statement Baby Dew. You remember Baby Dew? I can't think of his real name. He was defensive back coach when I was there. He had come from Atlanta, but he was defensive back coach, and he was he said all of us, you know, basically need to be on the same page. But he used the acronym like NATNE, and he would say assignment, alignment, technique, execute. He said all of y'all have to have that. You know, you got to know your assignment. You have to be in the right alignment. You have to use the proper technique, and then you can execute, especially as a unit. So I always took that. That was my rookie year. And I said, so you got to learn these plays. Then you got to be aligned correctly in order to be in the right position. But that meant everybody kind of like, you know, so your safeties would talk to the linebackers. Your linebackers would talk to the line. Your safeties would talk to your corners. Even your corners have to communicate with your linebackers. So it's a constant circle. And everything is moving rapid. I mean, it goes fast. These teams was lined up in this shift. All of a sudden, that's a total different defense. Right. So you had to know when you went over. So, you know, I think being a team, you probably see it a lot, guys shifting guys over because they don't, you know what I'm saying? That person knows. He knows your alignment. So it's a team effort. And I find that to be something that's where guys get to free themselves up when you know you're looking at a corner or a safety. And I'll tell the safety, hey, I'm gonna jump this, even though I'm in zone. If they run this backside slant, I'm going to jump it. You know, like stuff like that. So there was a play that I saw, and I said, you know, I'm going to jump this. Even I'm in cover two, I said, I'm going to jump this route, but I would do this to my safety. And he said, I got you, you know, because if they run slant and go, I'm beat. But right. If they don't, then we got to play. So and I tell people, I said, being in the right position is good, but if everybody just play position, nobody, you know, you're not going to get nothing. You have to have players who make plays. Like, right. You might be somewhere you ain't supposed to be, but you read the play. You know, that was your gap there, but you saw the ball, so you go make a play. So the coach can teach you so much, and I learned that lesson. And I remember Bill Parcells saying it, and he said, we were losing some games, and he says, I can't win a game for you. He said, you guys do everything I ask you to do. He said, but you got to learn how to win. So right. We were all individually trying to do our jobs, but it needed to be an effort. Like a full team effort. And then we somehow picked that up and ended up, you started seeing guys make plays from this coverage, from that coverage, you know, from this alignment. And you saw it developing, but that's because you trusted the guy next to you and, you know, communicating. At first, you just wanted to do your job. And you said, if I do the right job, I'm going to be okay. But it's not always that. It's the man that can make that play. He might slip under the block. That ain't his job. His job is to keep front side or whatever, you know, sure. To cut that. He might slip under the block and make the play. But he has enough confidence to know that, hey, you know, I'm a safety, I'm a linebacker. You feel those guys. And that's why you're correct in that, you know, it's a team sport. It's relying on the next guy. And it's you really do gain trust in guys. And you know it sometimes when you can't, you know, there might be a guy you might not have as much trust in. But you want to develop them, got to develop. But it is a team effort. But I think you still have to make those individual plays to be to truly win. You can't just do your job, because I can remember us having film and we were losing games, and you wouldn't have people get negative scores. Everybody played pretty much where they're supposed to be at, but it wasn't getting it done.
Right.
All of a sudden, you saw people start to step up and make a play, shoot a gap, read something. And then guys start to get free. And then I'm going on this play, linebacker, I'm coming inside of you, you know, whatever it is. So I think it is a team effort, and it becomes much more of a team effort, especially when you're lined up on a guy and you're trying to turn things around. That's when players make plays. I think they get more comfortable once everybody gets comfortable with the players they have. Because my rookie year, I was comfortable Fred Merriam was going to be in that post. I ain't had to worry about the post, so I'm comfortable. You know, I know he's gonna be there. Wherever if he's not, he's gonna say, "Mo, you got no post help." then I know I don't have post help, but they're able to relay that and everybody gets on the same page. So you're right, 100%. Yeah.
Cool. All right, Mo. So it was a pleasure.
Well, having, yeah.
It was a pleasure having you on for a year.
Man, look here. I've been reading Bob's book. I've been going through it, and I've been showing people and bragging about it. And you had every stat in there. Because I remember I ran a punt back, and I said, nobody knows that. And I had a couple sacks. I never see this on my car. You know, like, I had, like, 3 or 4 sacks, you know? I had forced fumble. I had, you know, so there were things in there I want to I appreciate that. And I take my book out. People got some Patriot fans, and I said, man, I see this book I got, whatever. You know, look in. And they see all the players. So they're fascinated by it. And they got a lady, my friend is a mailman, and she die hard Patriot, everything. And I had to go over there, and I brought the book, and I said, here you go. She goes, I said, well, you might be able to get one online. I think you can. I'm not sure. She might have called and go, look, she is die hard. You go ahead, Patriot everything from the front porch into the house. It's Patriot, New England Patriot. So she,
thank you very much. That's cool. Yeah, you can get it online. Yeah, thanks.
I appreciate that. So, boys, I enjoyed it, man. And I'm gonna try to get up there to see you guys. And,
yeah,
that'd be great.
Absolutely.
I think I'm gonna do that. And
but we're gonna start a new tradition. So every year that we go, now I'm backing on year 2. So every year anniversary, you're gonna be the guest on our anniversary show.
Special guest.
All right. Here we go. Special guest.
Well, y'all make my day.
Just remember, Mo. There's only one first guest.
That was you. I'll tell you right now, the show is outstanding. And the show is great. And y'all got Urban Fryer on?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Urban, yeah, because I talked to Urban. But I'll call up some guy. I call these guys. Sometimes you know how guys are. But I'll see what I can do on it, man. It is wonderful. I sent that out to everybody. I said, you need to check out Untold Paper Stories. You know, I sent them the little clip. You know, these guys people love it. So yeah. I think you guys came up with it's a brilliant idea. I don't know who else doing it in the league or what, but it was a brilliant idea. And I think it really brings back a lot because older players get to appreciate, you know, what they did and how things went and, you know, who remembers them. And it's important for us to go on and, you guys enjoy the players. Like, you enjoy the players. That's right. Fascinating that you enjoy them and you know them. And you know what I mean? I can call out a name and you know a player before me. You're like, he played at such and such. He did that. So it's the interest and everything in that, man. And it's great. You guys keep up the good work. And I back you all the way on this thing. This is great.
All right, Mo. Thanks again. Thanks, buddy. That's great show.
Gentlemen. Thanks so much.
All right. If I'm coming, I'll let y'all know. Thank you. Yeah.
All right. All right.
Thanks for listening to Untold Patriot Stories with Scott Prusak and Dave Usher. Please follow us on whatever platform you download your podcasts and be sure to tell your friends.